A Playlist Original.
Welcome to the Pilot Podcast,
where we watch the pilot episodes of TV shows to answer your question, should I watch this?
My name is BJ.
And my name is Me Too.
And this week, we're checking out Debris on NBC, Marriage or Mortgage on Netflix, Delilah on OWN, and Generation on HBO Max.
So stay tuned to the end to find out if BJ was on his high school's water polo team. All right, BJ. Well, first we have Debris on NBC. And on this show, Brian, played by Jonathan Tucker, is a CIA agent. And he works with Finola, played by Ryan Steele, who is an MI6 operative. And they are trying to investigate and collect scraps from space that have been falling all over the Western Hemisphere. Brian is suspicious, while Finola thinks that Earth may have been specifically chosen for this gift. We'll follow them as they determine if this is blessing or if it's curse. And as they uncover the debris. Powers.
So I just want to start off saying I really liked this concept for a sci-fi series. It's very simple, but I think it has a lot of potential for the directions it can go in. We have this mysterious spaceship that's now falling to Earth in pieces, and each piece has some properties we don't understand. And that gives us an open-ended story, but it all is still cohesive. What were your thoughts?
For my fellow Hive who is not so into sci-fi or science fiction.
Or science or fun, cool things or technology. Continue.
For my fellow people who lack curiosity intellectually. This show is not particularly difficult to follow. It's true. The premise is very straightforward. There are these things coming from the sky. They each have powers and they are affecting people differently. And in this first episode, they smartly showed us a few different ways that these things have power. So they potentially are charged by magnets, so they float. They may cause other people to float. They may show you things in the recesses of your mind. They might be connecting with you emotionally. They might bend space and time and have you drop from where you're standing to 14 stories below you. It's really cool and scary and layered.
I think that's the exciting part because we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg. They gave us a nice range of abilities and powers that this debris has, but I think they make it clear that the agency, this global agency that is coming together, doesn't fully understand or is not revealing what they fully understand about the debris. Because while watching this show, we also see that Brian and Finola's handlers, their respective handlers at the CIA and MI6, are trying to keep secrets from their fellow agencies.
There is the overarching mystery of what is this debris and why is it falling. There's the mystery of what the debris does. And then there's this mystery within the relationship between Brian and Finola, where they have to trust and rely on each other, but outside forces are forcing them not to because they can't disclose everything to each other.
I liked that part a lot because, as you touched on in the summary, Brian and Finola have different philosophies on what the debris means and what it can do for society and the future. And I think that's extended with their respective agencies, that there are different forces who want to use the debris for different reasons. And we don't fully understand those reasons. We even see the arms dealer, Anson Ash, played by Scroobius Pip, who is capitalizing on this foreign debris, the value it has due to its unknown properties. And I like that tension of what does the CIA want to use it for? What does MI6 want to use it for? What does this guy with a bunch of cash and a briefcase want to buy and use it for?
It is a testament to the producing of this show, the acting, the pacing, the writing, that they're managing to make these little metal scraps interesting. Because if I were to just hear you discuss that, I think my eyes would glaze over. I think I would have just checked out. Whereas you are actually curious about what all of these people are interested in for the debris. What do they want to do with it? And then that is all weighed against Brian and Finola, who both seem to have very noble intentions. They both, in their own way, seem to want to save the world.
Yes. One wants to take the debris and use it to advance society. And one wants to basically safeguard it so no one will use it against society. And I understand both perspectives.
So where do you see the show going next, given this common goal, but very different approaches to get there?
Well, we'll say for our listener that there are some big reveals at the end of the pilot episode, and I think it lets us know that there are other forces also interested. And so I really just see this as like a season-long tug of war, but more than two sides, where everyone's going to be fighting over the debris, and we even see some of the bad guys, these arms dealers, use teleportation with the debris. And so I want to see maybe Brian and Fanola be forced to use the debris to help them with their mission.
Ooh, that would be cool if they could travel by debris. We also, in this pilot, start to get into their backgrounds. Not to give too much away, but one of the things the debris takes advantage of is your feelings of grief, which was a smart plot device on the show because it quickly let us know the core motivations of our main characters because of the things that they are grieving. So I also look forward to how that is explored further on the show, given how deep their grief was that the debris was able to pull from.
And underneath all of this, we have to recognize it is a fairly standard NBC procedural. How did you feel about government agents solving the case of the week? And how does this compare to Fringe, which is a sci-fi procedural that you did enjoy?
I would say it is a fun, interesting take on the standard procedural of people in uniforms solving mysteries. For Fringe, I think that was a little more sci-fi heavy, and maybe that's coming with Debris. But on Debris, I think I texted you last night, it felt like an emotional Fringe. There were so many tears. Everyone's eyes were watery on the show for probably the latter half of the episode, whereas I can't remember an episode of Fringe where the characters cried for, I would say, over half the episode.
Well, you know, like you said, the actors are just so talented on this one. They're really trying to tug on your heartstrings.
Oh, yeah, they are. So do you want to watch more episodes of the show?
I do. I will keep watching, seriously. I'll stick with it weekly. I want to know more about the debris and what it can do. How do you feel?
I liked it too. I think for people who are not so into sci-fi, I wouldn't say would watch again seriously, but I would say try the pilot. We've done that rating before where it's check it out and then maybe watch a couple more episodes, see where the story goes before choosing to not watch anymore or choosing to continue with it.
Okay, casually dip your toes in the water and see if it's the right temperature.
In the well of tears.
Well, that's sad.
So take us to the not as sad Marriage or Mortgage on Netflix.
Yes, we're no longer collecting debris, but deciding how to spend money. On Marriage or Mortgage, we have a wedding planner and a real estate agent, and they are competing to win over the budgets and the hearts of spouses-to-be. The whole concept, very simple. Do you pick your fairy tale wedding or your dream home? And leading our couples on this journey, we have realtor Nicole Holmes and wedding planner Sarah Miller. In this first episode, we're introduced to Liz and Evan. They are planning to move from Naples, Florida to Nashville, Tennessee. Evan just got a new job in Nashville, and they want to be close to downtown, and they have a $35,000 budget. But Liz doesn't like renting. She sees it as wasted money, so they are considering buying a house. But at the same time, this couple has gone to like 15 or 16 weddings together since they've been dating, and Liz doesn't want to continue being an unmarried wedding guest. She wants to know when it's her turn to be a bride. So on this first episode, there's going to be the challenge. How do we get a dream wedding with themes like breweries and trolleys and food trucks? Or how do we get a dream home with a huge closet, it's fully set up, turnkey, ready to move in, and has yard space for their dog, Franklin? So Mitu, what were your first impressions? Let's start with the concept of the show.
Okay, the concept was a lot to buy, because we are supposed to assume that Nicole and Sarah share an office and do this. But there is no way a business actually exists where you walk in and you go, I'm trying to decide between a house and a wedding. Go. There's just no way. So I think pushing past the concept, it is a good show to tell you how much houses and how much weddings are. I didn't know how expensive those could get so quickly. I was very surprised when they would be like, "Ooh, I love this dish," or "I love this drink," or whatever. And then Sarah would be like, "Well, if you really like it, it's $15,000. So,
yeah, or like, you have to meet this minimum with the food. So be prepared.
Yes. And I just am very unfamiliar with that. As we see with Liz, I too am queen of showing up to weddings unmarried. So I just don't know what the cost is of the ceremony and the reception. So that was interesting to see. It does also feel very pre-COVID. So I looked it up and it was filmed end of 2019, top of 2020, which makes sense. So it feels like from another world in that sense.
I like that. I don't think this show should be or would even be interesting if it was filmed now, because weddings can't exist the same way they usually do. In fact, people are having micro weddings now in order to accommodate for the fact they can't have the full ceremony.
Is that what it's called?
That's the new term, micro wedding. I think that's 25 or less, or 20 or less, something like that.
That makes sense.
Basically, whatever the like state guidelines are or less. So let's get into our couple. They want to have a nice home. We'll start there. Their budget, we have the $35,000 for a down payment. They're willing to go up to $450,000 for their home. And they want to be downtown, big backyard, storage, move-in ready. Is it just me, or did that feel like a big ask?
Okay. Pre-COVID, I would have said they should definitely get a mortgage, because that's a stable choice and a wedding is just a big party and you could do a smaller version of that for cheaper. Post-COVID, now that we're all going to have our hopefully very fun falls, I say it is more of a toss-up where are we going for the fun experience? Like, you and I have already talked about some trips. I'm ready to spend some money on experiences in the latter half of this year and into next year. So now I understand more why someone would want to spend money on this versus the stability of a home.
The pandemic finally made it click why people like throwing big parties.
I swear to you, it did. I get it now. I get why people want to be around people in settings like that. It's clicking, as Tiffany's mom would say.
It only took 30 years, but she got it.
Mm-hmm.
I do think one of the cool parts about seeing them plan the party, kind of switching to the wedding half, is that this show very clearly is being used to market and advertise for Nashville businesses. They name drop Fat Bottom Brewery as the venue. They name drop Loveless Cafe Truck for the food cart. I think they also revealed the wedding trolley company name. I didn't pick up on that. But this is clearly an opportunity for these companies who work in the wedding space to show themselves to a new audience. And let's just jump into the end. We see that they're all cutting deals for the couples on these shows.
Yes. So I looked on to see how more episodes are, because I was so confused by the deep discounts that they got for both the home and the venue when they were presented with their final options by Sarah and Nicole. And now that you're saying this about the fact that these businesses get exposure, I can't believe I didn't think about that, that I'm sure they are getting like free additional beers and free additional trolleys and things like that to sweeten the deal, because I bet those businesses are paying that in order to be featured as nicely as they are being featured on a major platform like Netflix.
Exactly. I don't think it's a coincidence that Sarah found these places. And I'm sure Nicole has worked out some deal to get these homes exposure as well. And maybe that comes with them giving, you know, a $20,000 discount on the listing price.
They got some deep house discounts. So, Beej, do you want to watch more episodes of this show as couples choose between marriage or mortgage?
I don't know. This reminds me a lot of Love It or List It on HGTV. And I like that show, but the concept of staying in your home or buying a new one clicks more to me than buying a home or having a wedding. I will watch a few more episodes, maybe if I'm bored. This could be like a while doing laundry type of show. But I'm not near the wedding planning phase of my life. And I also wonder, why can't these couples have both? Just compromise on the wedding and the house, and then you get it all.
I agree. If you're looking for another show, like something you'd find on HGTV, then honestly, I would still recommend anything on HGTV and just having that on Sundays at the background as you're doing your chores, which is what I do. But otherwise, I don't know that I'm running toward this show. And I agree. Why can't they have both? Why can't they just have a slightly cheaper home and a cheaper wedding?
I know. You need to ask the couples.
Evan, Liz, call me. Don't call me.
Should we move on to a show that is leaving Tennessee and heading over to its neighbor, North Carolina, in Charlotte?
Delilah, played by Mara Hill, used to be an attorney at a huge law firm, but now she's a sole practitioner who takes on cases the other firms ignore. She's also mom to Maya, played by Kelly Jacobs, and Marcus, played by Braylon Rankins, and cares for her nephew Dion, played by Khalil Johnson, while his dad rehabs at the VA. In this first episode, she's helping a college friend, Leah, played by Saekon Sangblo, who believes she was unfairly fired from her job at a defense contractor. So, Beach, how did you feel about this show?
I like that it's set in Charlotte, North Carolina.
I figured you would.
You like Charlotte, don't you?
Yeah, but you're a North Carolina boy.
True. You weren't far from North Carolina.
Yeah.
I think that this was a nice legal show with that family element. I think they really struck a 50-50 kind of balance with where they were going with this story, where it's very family heavy with the kids and her nephew, and then very heavy with she's doing her own thing. But they emphasize she has this reputation that she's helping the people who needs it. She can, well, I question, can she fix it? But she's the one people go to if it needs to be fixed.
That's true. We don't know if she can fix everything, but she's certainly number one on everyone's speed dial.
What were your first impressions?
As you said, there's a lot going on between work and home. So in talking about some of the players, you see that she is trying to be a good mom to her kids, but she also has another child in her home, Dion, that she's caring for while her brother is at the VA, and his wife, Dion's mom, isn't emotionally ready to take Dion on yet. And so it's really sad to see, because the brother blames himself because his wife begged him not to do an additional tour of duty and he did, and it forced him to be at the VA for a very long time, and the wife said that she wasn't capable of taking on that in addition to raising the child.
I'm just gonna say, I don't feel bad for Dion's mom. Talk to your child. That's all I'm gonna say.
You're like one of the audience members at any of those like morning gossip shows. Like, you know how Wendy will go out into the crowd and ask advice of like her audience? You're like that, but that's cool. We can get into this. I think there are too many storylines. There's a lot going on at home. She's trying to care for her brother and her kids and her nephew. And then at work, she has her assistant Harper, played by Ojoma Akaga. And she also might be taking on this new associate named Demetria, played by Susan Hayward. There's already some tensions there between Demetria and Harper. And then she has her best friend Tamara, played by the icon, the living legend, one of the most beautiful women on the planet, Jill Marie Jones. But Tamara may be her opponent in a case that she's taking on because of Leah.
Yeah, we have all these people at home, at her office, in her social circle. And then she has this case, which is also with someone from her past. She has a million connections going on.
And then there's her ex-husband, Gordon, played by Lyric Bent, who also has a complicated relationship with her because there might still be some feelings there. He spent way too much money on her daughter's violin that her daughter wanted.
She needed it.
Also owes her money and doesn't have money to take care of other things, but spent $10,000 on a violin. I felt like this show had too many reveals, too many threads.
And she has her guy on the ground who's doing background checks, running plates, just driving around town and looking for people.
It was too much. I thought the acting was good, but I think because this is a standard legal drama where I believe Leah's case will be the case of the season, but I assume there will be from week to week cases of the week as well, that they were just like, we're not going to be a standard boring legal drama. We're going to give you reveal, reveal, reveal. I just felt like at every turn, I was like, oh, okay. Oh, they're dead. Like, I was just like, oh, and he's related to whom? And I couldn't keep anyone straight after that.
Okay, so let's play Me Too is now a new writer on Delilah. What storylines would you cut? What's on the chopping block?
I would have moved her meeting the associate to the next episode.
Okay.
Because I thought that was an unnecessary distraction And I get why they put the associate in the pilot. I'm sorry, this woman that interviewed to try to be her associate. Yes.
It's supposed to be an informational interview, but she turned it into a job interview.
Yes. So that was a fun scene, but I think that they put that in to tell us something about the relationship between Delilah and her assistant Harper. But I think they could have just revealed that without introducing a new character.
Okay.
And I think we could have done less of the ex-husband. I spent too much time caring about him and the violin and money he owes her or money he spent or whatever that storyline was. I would have liked to focus on, if you want to make Leah's case the case that we care about, tell us more information about that. Give us a little more juice on Tamara, and then the rest can just sort of be in the background.
I agree on everything except the Tamara part. I would save the reveal that her firm might go against Delilah for a little later. So maybe Delilah's building up her case and then, surprise, you might be seeing your friend in court.
There were so many reveals that when they realized they might have to go up against each other for the first time in 20 years of practicing in the same city, it should have felt bigger than it was. Whereas I was just so tired by the end of the episode that I was like, okay, cool.
Yeah, just add it to our list of things to do.
Okay. Yes. And by tired, I don't mean tired of the show, but I was just like, would you say every few scenes, they were like, and now this?
They did not waste any time when it came to story.
Not at all.
Which is surprising. A lot of shows can fill up 40 minutes and you barely learned anything, but this show said every minute counts.
I always take notes as I watch shows in order to be able to discuss them with you because I don't trust my memory. But on this one, this is an audio medium, but I wish I could show y'all my notes. My page is packed because I just didn't want to forget anyone.
You could easily do that.
Well, Beach, do you want to watch more episodes of this show?
I think I will rely on you to learn more about Delilah. And then maybe you can tell me when to come back to the show, if there are some major reveals amongst the many reveals, and if it is worth watching. How do you feel?
So you sort of preempted how I feel, but...
Yeah, I'm directing you towards a rating.
I will say that even though I was frustrated by the number of reveals and the amount of story that they gave us, there is something there, and it's compelling. The case, once we're able to get into it, sounds really interesting. And the idea of her going up against her friend is interesting too. So I don't think I'll watch seriously, but I do think I'll wait a few weeks, let episodes build up, and then watch a few at a time.
Okay. You want to kind of binge through bigger chunks of the story.
Yes. And I will add, though, that it is very difficult to ignore some of the colorism issues in the show. The central character is light-skinned. But everyone else around her who's acting up is dark-skinned. There have been a lot of discussions in media about Lovecraft Country and colorism broadly, and they were brought up by Amber Phillips, who is at Amber Abundance on social media. It just feels tough to ignore how everyone is positioned on the show.
We need to acknowledge it.
And do better.
I'm doing baby steps because there are a lot of people who aren't going to do better yet.
That's true.
Until they acknowledge it, at least.
That's true. People do need to own things first. So we need people to own things. And can't not mention what's going on Delilah so far that is a little icky.
So how about we switch to a show where a fair amount of the characters are owning what they do. Some others still need to learn. And this is Generation on HBO Max. So from the creators of Girls, who tried to do a show all for millennials, Leah Dunham and Jenny Connor are back with Generation for Gen Z. This is a dark but playful show following a group of high school students who are exploring modern sexuality and all that that means while testing their deep beliefs about life, love, family, and they're all living in a conservative community, which presents a lot of challenges for some of the characters. This show features an ensemble cast, so we have Chloe East as Naomi, Uli Schlesinger as her brother Nathan, Haley Sanchez as Greta, Justice Smith as Chester, and Chase Suey Wonders as Riley. And in this first episode, we do see a mysterious flash forward with two girls and a pregnancy in a mall bathroom. But then we go back to the present day, a normal high school day where we see our cast having different perspectives about what it's like living their life at this high school and then going to Riley's party later that night. So Mitu, I think with this kind of show with the ensemble cast, let's first go into your first impressions and then let's break it down character by character.
Okay, my first impressions of this show is it's clearly made for people younger than I am. The show was created by a teenager named Zelda Barnes, and she partnered with her dad, Daniel, to do it, in addition to having the producing team with Lena Dunham. That said, I do love how seriously they took teenage emotions. Often with teenage shows, especially the ones that you and I grew up with, they tend to make fun of what young people are experiencing. And what I like about this show is that there are stakes, and whether or not you respect the stakes of what these kids are experiencing, the show takes seriously how they feel about them and how they're reacting to them. So whether or not you care that Chester has to deal with a dress code at school, you do care about how he feels about when he's singled out for dress code violations. And that I really like.
I agree. I think the emotional aspect is there. I do wonder a little bit if some of the intensity and drama makes more sense for college students than high school students. But I think that's something a lot of TV shows do when they blur what's going on with teenagers. Because these kids had a lot of freedom, and you see that on a lot of high school shows where I knew some kids who could just roam around and do whatever, but it wasn't to this extent.
That's true. It does seem that culture and media tends to blend the ages 14 to like 23. That's just the big old same melting pot of experiences.
All that adolescence.
Yes, all of that just growing up and figuring yourself out. All the same thing. That's a great point, Beach. So let's talk character by character. And I don't think we can cover all of them, but as you said, you named a few main ones. Let's first go with Chester, who I think is the center of our show.
So we do start with Justice Smith's character. We see him start off his day with that dress code violation that you mentioned, which sends him to the new guidance counselor, Sam, played by Nathan Stewart Jarrett. And we see that he's starting to get a crush on this new guidance counselor, who sounds like he's much younger and more cool and hip than the previous one. We instantly find out that this character Nathan has a crush on him. He's invited to a party by a girl he doesn't even know yet. And he's also this confident, popular guy. He gets attention from everyone. He has good grades. He's the star of the water polo team. I'm not really sure where they're going with this character because he seems to have it all, but he also seems to be very lonely and sad.
And he and Sam, the counselor, connect on that level, where Sam talks about having had feelings of loneliness and sadness before. And so you see this kinship between them of experiencing that. I wonder where they're going next, whether we get to see more of Chester's home life. Sam at one point calls Chester's grandma, so there's already a hint there that he is in a potentially non-traditional home if he's being raised by his grandma as his primary parent. So I'm curious about what's happening next. And of course, Justice Smith is just so talented too, that he plays a very ridiculous but emotionally layered teenager very well.
So how about we go to kind of a trio? We have Nathan, and then he has his best friend Riley and his sister Naomi. What are your thoughts about those three?
I think you know my thoughts on Naomi. Not a fan. Haven't been a fan. Likely won't be a fan in the future. Nathan identifies as bisexual, and he is scared to come out of the closet because his mom is a potentially political figure and also a church leader. Her name is Megan. She's played by Martha Plimpton. And when we are introduced to her, she says something about leading the prayer breakfast for the mayor. We also know this is a conservative town, so likely he's not very safe in his home to come out. Conversely, we have Naomi, who has a boyfriend and she's all over him, and she maybe overshares with Nathan about her experiences with her boyfriend. But then there's a moment where it seems she might be blackmailing Nathan because of his sexuality. So I stopped seeing it for Naomi right in that moment, not seeing it for that character, not feeling it. Riley is an interesting character because so much happens at her party. But she is not involved in the drama. She just is sort of around it, or a lot of it takes place at her house party. But at the end, we do see a sign that she herself has a lot going on.
Yes, I feel like Riley is this supportive person and everyone is just draining all of her energy. Nathan seems like a very dependent friend. Riley wanted to get to know Greta at this party, but she gets pulled away due to Chester. She has a bunch of people running around, so I feel like she's not always doing what she wants for herself.
Greta is an interesting character too. We see that she might have some issues with self-image. She's being raised by her aunt, and she also lives with her younger sibling as well. They say her mom is away. To me, that implies jail or prison.
Something bad.
Yes, because the way that Greta describes it, she uses some personal responsibility language. Like, she chose this, or this is her fault, or something like that.
But what's also interesting, her aunt seems to make it seem like Greta has some sort of responsibility or connection to why her mom is still away.
Mm-hmm. I wanted more of Greta and less of everybody else. I was very intrigued by the couple minutes that we got to spend in Greta's apartment.
There's more to that.
Definitely. And then lastly, we met Ariana, played by Nathania Alexander, which, again, like Delilah, I can't ignore the fact that Justice Smith, a light-skinned character, gets even just minutes of character development where you see that he's not just this obnoxious person. There's potentially more that his behavior is rooted in. Whereas when we're introduced to Ariana, she immediately says some homophobic language. She says that it's okay because she has two dads. And then you hipped me to the fact that she's also the drug dealer for the other students. I didn't notice that when I watched it.
Yeah, at the party, she is the drug dealer. She's taking drugs from her parents and selling them to her peers. She's presented as an obnoxious, wealthy girl who doesn't think that she's doing anything wrong.
So this isn't a knock on her as an actor at all. But I do wonder why we see Greta in a very short clip get so much character development. And yet, Ariana has a similar amount of time, and we only see her do weird things or hateful things.
That's true.
And I just can't ignore that.
She doesn't have her redeeming moments that they try to give to Chester, Nathan, Riley, and Greta.
Even Naomi. And you know how I feel about Naomi.
She gets more development, yes.
She gets more development, and you can see how deeply she loves her brother. And that's part of why she's acting out.
Even Sam gets more development than Ariana.
And Sam was in the damn show for like 15 seconds.
He's not even one of the high schoolers.
Sam is our age. He does not need that much development on that show. So why? Who is in charge of Ariana's character? You call me. Let's talk about this.
I think you said the creators' names. You know who.
That's true. Zelda, Lena, Daniel. You know my number. I'm just kidding. Could you imagine?
Well, me too. What are your predictions for any of the storylines? And how do you think we're going to get to that pregnancy 3 months from now?
That's my whole prediction, is that baby's going to come back. That was not a throwaway scene.
I hope not. That's a weird tease to just drop.
That's true. Listeners, as background, the show opens with a girl sitting outside of a bathroom and another girl inside the bathroom.
In a mall.
In a mall, potentially giving birth. And then we cut away from that scene. We don't get those girls' names, and we just immediately jump into the main cast and the main show. So I think we're going to get more of that baby. It has to come back. And also, I wonder if one of the people we've met on the show is the baby's mom.
Oh, yeah. We didn't see the face of whoever was in the bathroom.
So do you want to watch more episodes of this show?
Probably not. I don't think I need another teen drama right now. I think that this is a well-acted show. I think they have a very talented cast. I think right now it's just poor timing for me in terms of wanting to watch more of this show. How do you feel?
I want to watch more of it. It is a juicy drama starring young people with complicated relationships. Obviously, that has me and Juicy Drama Hive written all over it. I do think that there are some problematic elements, as we've discussed, but I want to give it another shot and watch a few more episodes and see where they take the characters.
I'm glad I have you there to do that. You can tell me fun, spoiler-filled, like, two-minute summaries of each episode.
I'm here to labor for you.
I know. All right, Beach. This is a partnership, everyone.
Where can people find more episodes of The Pilot Podcast?
All you have to do is head to our website at thepilotpodcast.com, or you can follow us on your favorite podcast platform.
You can follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at The Pilot Pod, and you can send thoughts, feelings, recommendations for shows you want us to watch to askthepilotpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Bye.